This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Hello, this is Joel Hilliker, managing editor of the Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine. We have a lot to cover on the program today, and we're not even going to talk about the U.S. elections yesterday. Well, maybe a little bit at the end of the program, but we're going to talk about sanctions on Iran resuming this week. The Trump administration withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal earlier this year, and now economic sanctions on the regime kick back into place. We'll hear a report from Trumpet writer Brent Nachtigall on what the effects of this might be, viewed in light of what the Bible says about Iran's future. Then we'll move over to Britain, where politicians have announced the end of austerity. The British government is wholeheartedly embracing the glories of debt. Richard Palmer will tell us why this is a spectacularly bad plan. We also have an update on the migrant caravan heading toward the United States through Mexico, and the fact that armed American militia groups are heading to the border to address the issue. We have a report on this potentially explosive situation from Trumpet writer Andrew Miller. Also, in honor of the elections yesterday, for the last word, I'm going to read excerpts of a radio broadcast Herbert W. Armstrong gave in 1945 with some insight into why governments fail, even democracies. I'd like to start, though, by talking about a headline that appeared on one of the most popular news-related websites in the United States, Drudge Report. It was a link to an article from Britain's mirror.co.uk. And the headline was, "The three signs that biblical prophecies about the end of the world and the Messiah are coming true." The end times refers to the phrase time of the end that appears in the Holy Bible. The Bible also uses the last days and oftentimes in that day to describe the same time frame. This is a period long after the Bible was finished, during which people would be committing widespread sin and the entire world will plunge into unprecedented catastrophes, world war, supernatural cataclysms, and mass destruction. The Bible is where we get the term apocalyptic. And the sins described in these biblical prophecies definitely feel familiar. And so does the increasing danger of nuclear and biological and conventional mass destruction. And the signs of the end times are drawing some attention. But the people who are talking about this are all wrong. Now, certainly these three signs from this Mirror article are. I was amazed that someone thought that this was worth writing about, that the editors of the Mirror thought it was worth publishing, that the Drudge Report thought this was worth highlighting for millions of people. Let's just talk about the three signs that they mentioned. This article says, sign one, the red heifer. For years, some Jewish sects have been looking for the birth of a red heifer. The Temple Institute is an organization that is literally creating the furnishings and tools and clothing described in the Old Testament in anticipation of rebuilding the temple in Jerusalem. These Jews believe that the temple cannot be constructed until a pure, red, unblemished heifer is born and sacrificed according to instructions found in Numbers chapter 19. This sacrifice is necessary to give ritual purity to the building of the temple. And now there is a buzz that such an animal has been born for the first time in 2,000 years. So these are serious people. They're devoting serious resources, serious time to this effort. They've waited and waited for news of a new heifer that seems to fit the description. And those heifers have come, but then after examination, they've been considered blemished due to the presence of too many black hairs, for example. Now, obviously, there's also the niggling issue that Palestinian Arabs control the Temple Mount, where the Temple Institute plans to rebuild the temple and to resume sacrifices. And if you just mention the idea to them, that's enough to send the Palestinians into a violent rage. When a Jewish prime minister so much as visited the Temple Mount, the Palestinians launched 4 years of increased terrorism that resulted in about 4,000 deaths. People who deeply believe in the prophecies of the Bible, you know, they can put all that aside and even put their lives on the line to get rid of the Palestinians, to remove one of their most important mosques, rebuild the temple, just so long as they can find a red heifer. But the problem is, this is not a prophecy of the Bible. This quote-unquote biblical sign isn't based on Bible prophecy. It's based on centuries of religious interpretation and traditions of men. It's based on human reasoning. The Bible mentions red heifer one time, and it's among a long list of other religious rituals. The ashes of this animal, plus some cedar and some herbs and something scarlet, that doesn't magically do anything. It doesn't purify anything. Those sacrifices symbolized the coming of a sacrifice that would actually purify and cleanse and save all human beings. To resume those physical sacrifices, according to the prescriptions of the Old Covenant, that denies the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. And to consider it a sign of the end time, it's biblically unsound. It ignores actual end time prophecies. The second sign in this mirror article is fish in the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is so full of salt. It's about 35% salt. Almost nothing can live in it. Microscopic organisms can live there, but plants can't. Fish can't survive. But maybe that's changing. It appears the mirror quotes an Israeli photojournalist as having captured images of fish in sinkholes at the Dead Sea and says scientists are said to have been shocked to discover the sinkholes rapidly filling up with fish and other forms of life that never used to be sighted. Breaking Israel News states that dropping water levels have caused the formation of freshwater sinkholes. So this photojournalist and other people, they've referred to the presence of fish and other life at the Dead Sea as a fulfillment of Ezekiel 47. This prophesies that the Dead Sea's waters shall be healed and that fishermen will catch a wide variety of fish species there. But again, fish in sinkholes by the Dead Sea do not fulfill Bible prophecy. Those verses in Ezekiel 47 are part of a long description of a river that flows out of Jerusalem down to the Dead Sea, healing and enlivening everything in its path. The description of this river follows a long description of reapportioning of land in and around Jerusalem, a new temple being built, and a just, righteous government being established there. So the idea that some fish swimming in sinkholes at the Dead Sea partially or completely fulfills this futuristic vision that God gave Ezekiel, it's not biblical. It's not logical. It requires you to dive deeper and deeper, not into Ezekiel's prophecy, but into human ideas and speculation, human reasoning. Now, the third sign in this mirror article, a snake wiggled out of the Wailing Wall. The area, this is part of the western wall of the Temple Mount enclosure, and Jews and Christians believe it to be the last remnant of the Second Temple that the Roman Empire destroyed in 70 AD. It's one of the Jews' holiest sites. Well, last week, worshipers there saw a snake emerge from between the stone blocks of the Wailing Wall and frighten away a pigeon. And a man got a ladder and he fetched the snake, and that was the end of the episode. The Mirror cited, quote, some bloggers as saying that the snake, quote, is a symbol that we are living in dangerous times. They say these times lead up to the coming of the Messiah. And this article cites another eminently reliable source, some internet users, as saying that the snake represents the serpent in the Garden of Eden that enticed Adam and Eve to sin against God. Look, the Bible has no prophecies about a snake or a pigeon or a wailing wall. This event is as significant in end-time Bible prophecy as a house fly landing on your kitchen counter and taking off again. Those are the three prophetic signs brought to you by The Mirror, this sensationalist tabloid, in its weird news section. Two of them are backed up by a single Bible verse plucked out of context. The third is backed up by wisps of nothingness. Internet users who are saying crazy things about the significance of snakes and pigeons. But people are interested. They're curious about end-time Bible prophecy. It's just a shame that their interest is squandered on false, worthless prophecies, quote-unquote, that divert their attention away from real, honest, in-depth consideration of the actual end-time prophecies of the Bible. Even in today's secular Bible-hating society, people have a sense there's something to Bible prophecy. And that's because there definitely is something to it. Despite the errors of those who claim to know Bible prophecy, the Bible itself is flawless. It's one of the few religious books that dares to forecast the future. It's the only one that gets it right. Thousands of years after its prophecies were written, they happen. And a lot of Christians shy away from this fact, but the Bible does contain a lot of prophecy. Jesus Christ himself prophesied in detail. Bible prophecy can be difficult to understand, but God hasn't left us to just wander in and out of random, mysterious news that sounds related to Bible prophecy with no way of understanding if a current event is prophetic or not. God wants you to understand Bible prophecy. Now, if only at the top of Drudge Report next week, this headline appeared: the four signs that biblical prophecies about the end of the world and the Messiah are coming true. And it linked not to a tabloid like The Mirror, but to thetrumpet.com. And what would be waiting for the millions of people interested in Bible prophecy who clicked that link? Our article, posted September 19th of this year under the headline, Four Signs the Second Coming is Near, with biblically sound explanations of actual signs straight from Scripture that would immediately precede Jesus Christ's second coming and that have actually been fulfilled. If you have any interest in biblical prophecy, this is the article you need to read. Go to thetrumpet.com and learn what the Bible actually says about the end of the world and the Messiah. And these are just four end-time prophecies of many that you will find in the Bible. You can look at those and compare those to a few cherry-picked verses, a heifer, some fish, a snake, and I think you'll see which prophecies truly deserve to be front-page news.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
Economic pressure against Iran ratcheted up a notch on Monday when the United States reinstated yet another tranche of sanctions on the Islamic Republic. This comes exactly 180 days after President Donald Trump announced his withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal. The sanctions are designed to cut off Iran's ability to fund its terrorist activities across the world, as well as increase pressure on the government of Iran to change course. Speaking to reporters on Monday, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin characterized the sanctions this way.
Today, the United States is executing on the final actions to withdraw on the Obama administration's fatally flawed Iran deal. This morning, we will fully impose sanctions on the Iranian regime. This is part of a maximum, unprecedented economic pressure campaign the United States is waging against the world's largest state sponsor of terror. Today, we sanctioned more than 700 individuals, entities, aircraft, and vessels as part of Treasury's largest ever single-day action targeting Iran.
As Mnuchin related, these sanctions are targeting the areas that are going to hurt the Iranian economy the most, the oil, the gas, and the shipping industries. Now, it's true, these sanctions did start hurting far before they were reinstated on Monday. When President Trump announced his withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal, formerly known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action on May 8th, he gave Iran's trading partners 180 days to wind down specific business ventures with Tehran. And all of them, by and large, have been scaling back their business dealings with Iran. Even European companies, whose governments have largely opposed President Trump's withdrawal from the nuclear deal, have voted with their feet, with all major European companies pulling out of Iran over the last 6 months. And now, added with these sanctions, the International Monetary Fund forecasts a 1.5% contraction of the Iranian economy by the end of this year and a 3.6% contraction by the end of next year. Already, the Iranian currency, the rial, has fallen 70% in the past year, leading to a steep rise in inflation. Now, the ultimate goal for such intense economic pressure on Iran is, as United States Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said in an October 31st interview, to dissuade Iranian leaders from squandering the Iranian people's money on silly, malign activities and to get them to change their behavior. Back in May, Pompeo listed 12 conditions that Iran must meet in order for these sanctions to be alleviated. Given the scope of the demands, the only way Iran would be able to comply is if there is complete regime change or a complete repudiation of the cause of this Islamic revolution they are on. And so the United States is going to try and squeeze Iran until they change. This is how United States National Security Advisor John Bolton characterized the sanctions to Fox Business on Monday.
We're going to do everything we can to squeeze Iran hard, as the British say, to squeeze them until the pips squeak.
Wow.
And we're going to do everything we can. Their choice, and the mullahs in Tehran, either change their behavior dramatically or face economic disaster.
As tough as these sanctions are, it's important to note that at the outset, they're not going to be as bruising as they were intended to be, at least not initially. The reality is that the global oil market still needs some of Iran's oil. Indeed, in announcing the sanctions on Monday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said that 8 nations will receive waivers on purchasing Iranian oil for the time being in order to not raise the international oil price, which would affect American consumers. Mr. Trump confirmed this on Monday in talking to reporters, and in doing so confirmed that it was only going to be temporary.
With the oil, it's very interesting. We have the toughest sanctions ever imposed. But on oil, we want to go a little bit slower because I don't want to drive the oil prices in the world. This has nothing to do with Iran. I don't want to drive the oil prices in the world up. So I'm not looking to be a great hero and bring it down to zero immediately. I could get the Iran oil down to zero immediately, but it would cause a shock to the market. I don't want to lift oil prices. And if you notice, oil prices are going down very substantially, despite the fact that already half of their capacity is gone. But I don't want to do that. I saw some people saying, oh, why aren't you tougher on that? Well, number one, the sanctions are very tough. Number two, I don't want to lift the oil prices worldwide by clamping down 100%. It will be a gradual.
And so while the sanctions are now in effect, it will probably take a few more months before we really see how bad it's going to get for the Iranian economy. Now, the question that everyone is wondering, obviously, is what will Iran do? Will they come to terms with some of those 12 requirements laid out by Mr. Pompeo back in May? Or will they become more aggressive, asserting themselves across the region? There are many that believe that Iran could do just that. This is what the Washington Institute for Near East Policy wrote just a couple of days before the sanctions came into effect. Quote, with respect to the U.S. sanctions, some officials close to the Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei have been pushing for a strategy of greater resistance aimed at getting Washington to back off. The Ayatollah confirmed this mindset when he said submission is much more costly than resistance. And now the United States and some of its allies in the region, such as Saudi Arabia and Israel, are braced for some possible reprisal attacks. Such attacks could be led by proxies of Iran, such as Hezbollah, Hamas, or the Houthis, but they will no doubt be directed by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps commander Qassem Soleimani. Indeed, the response from Qassem Soleimani himself to the sanctions has been fiery and personal. Earlier this week, Soleimani responded to Mr. Trump's tweet about the upcoming sanctions with a poster saying, quote, "I will stand against you." Such warfare could easily cause immediate political and economic damage to Iran's enemies, especially Israel. This is why Foreign Policy warned, quote, "Once sanctions are back in full force, the United States needs to be ready for the worst." Nevertheless, while Iran may indeed decide to lash out and strike United States interests and allies in the region, it is possible that the sanctions will have a limited effect at temporarily curtailing Iran's actions in the Middle East. As noted by Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry in his article, Saving America from the Radical Left Temporarily, the election of Mr. Trump has led to a prophesied temporary resurgence of the United States both internally and abroad. Mr. Flurry wrote this, quote, "Donald Trump has proved himself willing to take a stand where others have not. It is quite something to behold him resisting these anti-American forces." Later on, he wrote, "When you compare what this president is doing to what his predecessor did, there has been a clear change in direction, one that will slow the speed at which America is being pulled apart," end quote. Now, it is logical to expect that a temporary saving of the United States will have knock-on effects internationally. Clearly, Mr. Trump's change of direction has been a boon for historic Middle Eastern allies of the United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia, both of which have been given the green light by the United States to hit back at Iranian proxies in the region. Furthermore, Bible prophecy also indicates that these sanctions may temporarily restrain Iran, at least in some arenas, especially considering that some of the objectives on Mike Pompeo's list of 12 conditions do fall in line with what the Bible says about Iran's end-time position. Point 9 specifically demands that Iran, quote, "withdraw all forces under Iran's command throughout the entirety of Syria," end quote. As we have forecast since the very beginning of the Syrian civil war, we do expect Iran to be removed from a position of influence inside Syria, and the United States' pressure could lead to that change. Now, Bible prophecy indicates that Iran will suffer some losses in the near future, but we can be assured from other scriptures that Iran is not going to make any changes in terms of its long-term strategy. Bible prophecy reveals that nothing short of overwhelming military force and not punitive economic sanctions will ultimately stop Iran's aggressive foreign policy, and that military force will not come from the United States, but from a European power. The most revealing scripture about this clash is in Daniel chapter 11 and verse 40, where it says, quote, "And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over," end quote. Iran leads this king of the south, and it's Germany that's going to lead the king of the north. And so will these sanctions halt Iran's quest for domination? Based on Bible prophecy, we know they won't. And yet, also based on Bible prophecy, it indicates that they may have a temporary effect holding back Iran.
Thank you very much, Brent. This really is fascinating, isn't it, to see the steps that the Obama administration took to empower Iran in so many ways, to see these being reversed. When the Obama administration actually ended the sanctions, I remember thinking at that time, well, there's absolutely no way that these would ever be put back in place, even though President Obama was saying, you know, if they violated the terms of the Iran nuclear agreement, the sanctions would kick right back in. But considering how many nations there were involved, how complicated it all was, Donald Trump doesn't seem to be too concerned about creating international support. He'll take it if he can get it, but he has this this determination to do something about Iran. It's quite extraordinary to see him taking this step.
Yeah, it's amazing to see the power of leadership in that sense, because every commentator out there was saying that was against the Iranian deal. They were like, well, if Iran breaks the deal, you say that there's going to be snapback sanctions. Snapback sanctions are impossible. How are we going to get Russia on board? How are we going to get China on board again? How are we going to get Europe on board again? People didn't think that it could be done. And yet it does look largely like Mr. Trump has achieved that. Even the European nations that are kicking up a fuss right now that Mr. Trump is out of the nuclear deal and he's trying to force European companies into European nations to following his sanctions because of the secondary sanctions that would take effect if they break U.S. sanctions and do deals with Iran. Basically, you have European companies saying, well, I'm worried more about my money than the European companies, European government's abilities to go around the sanctions. And so we're pulling out. And so nations, the companies of nations have pulled out of Iran, even if the other nations themselves, the political leadership doesn't want to. And so that shows that, you know, the money talks, money realizes that Mr. Trump is going to hold true to his word here in regards to sanctions.
And the point that you bring out about just how this stance on the part of the American administration could actually facilitate and hasten the fulfillment of some of these prophecies, I think the most notable being this split between Iran and Syria, the fact that this is one of the stipulations that America has, is that Iran has to get out of Syria. That it's just amazing to see that happen. Now, I am interested in just your thoughts about some of these the waivers that the Obama or that the Trump administration is giving to nations with that are quite hostile to the United States. China and Turkey, I guess, are standout among that. What might the consequences of that be, do you think?
Yeah, it is interesting that these eight nations were given. Including Taiwan, it was given a waiver to still, at least for the next 180 days, receive some amount of oil from Iran, which they're probably going to leverage that and take as much oil as they possibly can for these next 6 months. It is interesting that there are a couple of enemies of the United States. Well, Turkey is, I would say, it's an ally, but it's a hostile ally right now. This might be a case where Mr. Trump is throwing them a bone and giving them the opportunity, or trying to heal some of the wounds there. Maybe he's going to ask something from Turkey in the future. We could really see, though, I would say China leveraging this as much as possible. They really do. We've seen them try to work behind the sanctions before. And so in the next 6 months, we might see Iran actually stabilize for a bit because of the amount of oil that that China will be able to buy from them. And we know based on Bible prophecy that Iran is going to have enough resources to dominate large parts of the Middle East more than they do right now. And so they are going to have some access to some funds to do that. Whether they have enough in the bank right now, I doubt. And so these next 6 months, especially because they're still able to get money through oil sales from China and others, might put some money in the bank for the future.
A lot of interesting questions and elements in this story to keep our eyes on. There is a story that Brent has posted on thetrumpet.com. Will sanctions temporarily halt Iran's quest for domination? I also think it's worth pointing to that article by Gerald Fleury, Saving America from the Radical Left Temporarily, talking about the prophetic trend in the United States, this temporary resurgence that has been happening under the Trump administration. To understand that, according to what the Bible says about it, is quite a perspective, an important perspective to have, what's happening in the United States right now. And also the King of the South booklet. We'll put links to all of these in the show notes for today's program. Thanks so much. We've been talking to Brent Noctegal about these sanctions snapping back onto Iran. Thanks so much for your time, Brent.
No problem.
This is Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker.
For the last couple of years, the British government has been saying it's paying off the national debt, but now it's announced that this will no longer be necessary. The trouble is they were being deceitful before, and they've gone absolutely bonkers now, as we'll hear in this report from Richard Palmer.
Good news! Britain has discovered a magic money tree. Last week, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Philip Hammond, was bubbling with enthusiasm while he unveiled the latest spending plans of the British government. And he said, "I can report to the British people that their hard work is paying off and the era of austerity is finally coming to an end." That sounds like a cause for celebration. It sounds like we've worked hard, we've paid our debts off, and we're out of debt. We can stop worrying about saving money as a nation anymore. Our financial problems are solved. The government can spend whatever it likes. Except that is not true at all. Britain is still in massive debt. The announcement made it sound like Britain's about to get that debt under control, and it's not. It's just going to get much, much worse. Now, since the government came to power in 2010, they've repeatedly pretended to be getting this debt under control. They've been, well, in 2013, the Prime Minister, then Prime Minister David Cameron, said that we're paying down Britain's debts. They weren't. All that government ever did was reduce the amount that the nation borrowed each year, which is a bit like saying, well, it's a bit like a debt-addled householder saying, "I have my debts under control. I borrowed slightly less money this year than I did last year." That's not solving the problem. That's adding to the problem. And okay, maybe not adding to the problem quite as fast as you used to be, but you're still making things worse. Now, though, Britain's changing course from that. The new policy, we're not even going to pretend to be taking care of the debt. Alistair Heath wrote in The Telegraph, "Gone is the idea that the Treasury's priority is to balance the books, better to prepare for the next inevitable downturn, or even to store up cash for Brexit." He wrote that it seems there is, after all, a magic money tree, and that Mr. Hammond has discovered its existence even on Planet Tory. He wrote that the size and scale of the increases from the Chancellor, formerly known as Spreadsheet Phil, are jaw-dropping. Expenditure will shoot up by $11 billion next year and even more every single year after that. Now, 90% in the long term of this new magic money tree bonanza is going to go to the National Health Service, which, now, the NHS is pretty much the closest thing Britain has to a religion, and like many religions, it requires lots of sacrifices and pledges of adoration and doesn't give you very much in return. And many people are saying, well, this is probably just the beginning of runaway spending for Britain, because now we're pretending that austerity is over and that there's no need to save. Well, that means we're going to be much less likely to save the next budget and the budget after that. And the one after that, as all of these demands for money grow. Britain is happily now following the United States down the path of never-ending debt. Trumpet executive editor Stephen Flurry wrote in the 2018 Trumpet, "The United States is exploding its debt in a way never before seen in its history. The nation has amassed large debts before in times of war or recession, but generally it's paid much of its debts back after the nation has recovered." A bit later, he wrote that America is going into debt at an unprecedented rate. But what is even more alarming is that his leadership does not acknowledge that it is even a problem. So now Britain and America are in the same boat. We're going down the road to financial Armageddon together. Now, it didn't used to be this way. Britain's financial system and its commitment to paying its debts back used to be one of Britain's strengths. Paul Kennedy talks about this in his book, The Rise and Fall of Great Powers. He talks about Britain's ability to borrow money decisive in its series of victories over France. And back then, yes, the nation did borrow money. The Seven Years' War, the American Revolution, the Napoleonic Wars, they were all very expensive. But in peacetime, successive prime ministers and governments put a major focus on paying that money back. It was very important to them. And what that meant was that during some of these massive conflicts for the nation's very existence, it was able to borrow money at half the rate of its main rival, France. The French government ended up collapsing under the weight of its own debts. And there was a lot more wrong with the financial system than than simply this, but they did not put the same priority that Britain did in peacetime of paying off those debts, of clearing them. When the French collapsed, you know, they were just following in the footsteps of the Spanish Empire, which, despite massive wealth from the New World, defaulted on its debts repeatedly. It wasn't too concerned about paying them back. And it didn't just lead to economic problems. It led to the collapse of their empire. Now, part of the reason for this massive debt that we're going down this path is the moral decline of our nation. And Mr. Fleury talked about that in this same article. We're a nation focused on instant gratification, selfishness, and greed, he wrote. This explains why the wealthiest nation in history is still borrowing astronomical amounts of money. If you want something you can't afford, charge it on your credit card. If you want government benefits the nation can't afford, you vote for the politician who promises to borrow money to give you what you want. President Washington was deeply concerned about imposing a financial burden on the next generation, but who even considers what kind of burden we're placing on our future generations? Living according to the spiritual principle of giving produces prosperity. Borrowing is about getting for self, regardless of the consequences. God says in Acts 20, verse 35, that it is more blessed to give than to receive. He concluded that section by writing, as a nation, we've dug ourselves into a pit from which we will not escape purely because of selfishness and greed. And that's exactly the same in the UK. I mean, you've got to have some sympathy for the British government in these circumstances. It is a democracy, and they're responding to the way they're being pushed by voters. And this is what people want. A government that promises to give them everything for free, even if it means paying money that they don't have. Now, we face massive debt as a consequence of this foolish policy and foolish decisions, this moral decline. But the Bible gives us another reason for this massive debt. In Herbert W. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, you can read about how Britain and America today are the modern descendants of the Israelite tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. God promised amazing blessings to these birthright nations. But he told these nations that if they didn't obey, he would withhold these blessings. Those blessings were withheld from ancient Israel, and they were bestowed on Britain and America in recent history. In Deuteronomy 28, God promises promised our nations, well, he says that blessed shall you be in the city, blessed shall be your basket and your store, blessed shall you go in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. So our industry would be blessed, our labor, what people worked on during the day, the manufacturing that took place in cities, even the storage and investment of that wealth would all be blessed. And those blessings rocked the whole world when they arrived in the 1800s with the Industrial Revolution. These blessings laid the economic foundation of the British Empire. It was in large part due to these blessings that Britain was able to have a financial system that enabled it to defeat France. If there was ever a magic money tree, this was it. God says in Deuteronomy 28, he said, all of these blessings shall come on you and overtake you. Now, obviously, it was not magic. This was God pouring out blessings that we did not deserve to our nation, fulfilling his promises to Abraham and giving our nation an opportunity to be an example to the world. But we didn't take that opportunity. And so now, because these modern nations of Israel have not obeyed God, well, then the prophesied curses from the second half of Deuteronomy 28 are now coming upon us. And some of those are financial curses. The blessings are being withdrawn and we're being cursed instead. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 44 says that foreigners shall lend to you, and you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. That's Britain and America today. God says that this debt is a curse, and it gives other nations power over us. Britain and America's reckless borrowing is paving the way for a collapse in the global financial system. Herbert W. Armstrong talked about this in a July 22, 1984 co-worker letter. He said that a major banking crisis in America could, quote, suddenly result in triggering European nations to unite as a new world power larger than either the Soviet Union or the US. Those are the kinds of major world-shaking implications our borrowing, our debt, and the curses that go with them can have. There are many more end-time prophecies in the Bible that this massive debt and a financial crisis related to it can bring about. Now, you can read much more about this debt and about some of these cursings in our free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Britain's financial policies right now, they're sowing the seeds for our own destruction. And financial experts, historians, economic historians can tell you where this is leading. But only our free book can give you the background of why all this is happening and the great hope that lies beyond this crisis.
That was trumpet writer Richard Palmer. He wrote his trumpet brief on that subject yesterday. We'll put a link to that on the notes for the program today, and you can find that on thetrumpet.com. And now we'll move on. A caravan of thousands of migrants has been heading toward the United States' southern border for over a month, and the Trump administration is taking strong steps to deal with it. But it looks like the government is also getting some unsolicited help, as we will now hear in this report from Andrew Miller.
Gun-carrying militia groups and civilian vigilantes are headed to the U.S.-Mexico border to help stop a caravan of some 6,000 Central American immigrants from crossing the Rio Grande. According to Shannon Migali, the president of the Texas Minutemen, roughly 100 militia volunteers are gathering up coolers, tents, rifles, and aerial drones with plans to form caravans of their own. Their strategy is to trail the U.S. troops that President Donald Trump has deployed to the border, observing, reporting, and offering any aid they can. Yet the U.S. military is not necessarily pleased with this unsolicited help. According to military planning documents obtained by Newsweek, the military estimates that there are already 200 unregulated armed militia members at the border, in addition to the approximately 100 Minutemen on their way. U.S. military officials are concerned that the presence of unregulated militia members at the border may complicate their mission to enforce U.S. immigration laws. In Mexico, armed civilian militias have already risen up to defend their villages against drug cartels that the Mexican government seems powerless to stop. In some instances, these Mexican militias have stopped army officials, federal police, and all strangers from entering their villages. They have taken the law into their own hands. And this has many analysts worried that Mexico may soon experience a three-way civil war between organized crime groups, civilian militias, and government troops. And while the murder and civil pandemonium of Mexico may seem remote to many Americans, the same drug cartels causing so much carnage south of the border are operating in the United States as well. If Americans lose faith in the government's ability to defend the nation's borders, they could experience a similar three-way civil war between migrants, militias, and the military. Open borders are an attack on the very basis of citizenship. As a condition to belonging to a nation, individuals promise to obey the nation's laws and pay their taxes in return for government protection. When people lose faith in the police and in their armed forces to protect them, they take the law into their own hands and anarchy results. This process is well underway in Mexico, and it's starting to take hold in the United States. U.S. militias are not warring with illegal immigrants yet, but they are losing faith in the government and in the military to defend the nation's borders on their own. This is a harbinger of a coming age of anarchy. Almost 3,500 years ago, the prophet Moses recorded God's promise to bless Israel for obedience to his laws and to curse them for disobedience. And the late Herbert W. Armstrong explained in his most popular book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, that these promised blessings and prophesied curses apply primarily to the end-time descendants of ancient Israel, the U.S. and Britain. One of the curses that God said would come on Israel for disobedience was an open border, foreigners flooding uninhibited into the land. In Deuteronomy 28, it says, "But it shall come to pass, if you will not hearken to the voice of the Lord your God, to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes which I command you this day, then all these curses will come upon you and overtake you." Then after listing several other curses, it says, and he will besiege you in all your gates until your high and fenced walls come down, wherein you trusted throughout all your land. And he shall besiege you in all your gates throughout all your land, which the Lord your God has given you. Now, this reference to Israel's high and fenced walls coming down is about open borders where foreigners and strangers flood into the land. Other passages like Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 7 show that cities will burn with fire and the land will be laid desolate as it is overthrown by these strangers and foreigners. Attempts by militia groups and civilian vigilantes to stop the fulfillment of this prophecy will only make the prophecy come to pass more quickly. This is because God is bringing this prophecy to pass because the nation has failed to observe all the commandments and all his statutes. Now is the time for every American to ask what we might be doing to have brought such chastisement upon ourselves. God gave 10 basic laws on how to live. They're described in detail in our free booklet, The Ten Commandments. This book will explain the specific sins that have caused America to be cursed with open borders, political division, and political violence.
Thanks for that very much, Andrew. You know, thinking about the individuals who are taking it upon themselves to try to address this, or at least to provide whatever support they can to law enforcement, at this point, it does seem like, in some ways, you really have to applaud their effort to ensure that the immigration laws are being upheld. Without seeing directly what is going on here, this is a seems like a very different type of individual than, say, like the Antifa types who are trying to break things. Here you have people who are actually trying to uphold law.
Yeah, these aren't violent protesters who are wanting to break the law. These are concerned citizens that realize that the United States has an immigration law that has not been enforced well for the past 2 or 3 decades.
Right.
And are wanting to give whatever help and support they can to make sure that those laws are enforced. So, I mean, you can definitely applaud to a certain amount the just kind of the idea that, like, I'm going to, like, leave my house and go down there and with my binoculars and try to give whatever support to these troops President Trump's sending that they can. As I mentioned before, the troops aren't necessarily thrilled with the unsolicited help. They're kind of taking the standpoint, like I said, if we need you, we'll call you,
right?
Type attitude. But I think the bigger and more important story here is the decline in trust in government institutions. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned before, there's actually the civilian militias in Mexico have been, they're facing a much worse situation than the ones in America, but they've been more even violent in the far as like dragging suspected drug traffickers into their village and even doing like people's courts and civilian executions.
Mm-hmm.
But even then they're in a tight spot where there's laws in Mexico that the government's not able to protect them from these cartels. And so they're doing what they can to do it themselves.
Right.
In the United States, it's not quite that bad yet. And, you haven't seen that same level of violence or anything like that, but you are definitely seeing more and more, like I said, militia groups and types that have lost faith in the government to defend their borders. And right now that's manifesting in itself and just going out there with, you know, binoculars and a gun and trying to report to your local military commander any illegals you see coming across there. But it is the same spirit you've seen in other places that when you do see this social contract where, you know, people obey the law for the government to protect them and they don't trust the government to protect them, they have to start breaking the law. And you get on a very slippery slope there that as if you do start seeing more and more illegals flood over the border, you're going to see more and more civilian militias rise up to oppose them. And that's what I'm getting at with like kind of like this three-way civil war you're starting to see develop in Mexico, where the troops are having to now deal with civilian militias and drug cartels, and these three nodes are all kind of fighting each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, very interesting, and we'll have to keep our eyes on what happens with this particular group and with immigration in America going forward. This is obviously something that is spoken of quite strongly in biblical prophecy, and we appreciate that very much. We've been talking with trumpet writer Andrew Miller about the problems associated with runaway immigration. He's working on a story about this for thetrumpet.com. You can watch for that online. Thanks, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's time for today's last word.
I want to read excerpts from a transcript of a radio broadcast by Herbert W. Armstrong from November 4th, 1945. And he explains in this segment why even democracy fails. He spoke this right after America had emerged victorious from World War II, and he boldly said that America was at the most dangerous hour of its history. Let's look once again then to the real causes of war. When the eternal God first created man and placed him on this earth, all was perfect harmony and beauty. All things in the universe operate according to fixed law. There are the laws that keep the planets, sun, stars traveling in their prescribed courses through the heavens. On earth is the law of gravity, the law of inertia, the laws of physics and chemistry. There are laws that regulate the physical body, and your physical health depends on not violating them. And then of necessity, there is a great fundamental, inexorable spiritual law to regulate man's relations with man and man's relations to his creator. This spiritual law might be called the law of love. It is a principle, a way of life. It is an attitude of mind and heart, the correct way to think and to live. This is the way of living that puts the premium upon giving, not getting. This spiritual law was designed to protect man's welfare and happiness. And just as breaking the physical laws of the body result in suffering, sickness, or death, so it is that when this spiritual law is broken, unhappiness, suffering, both physical and spiritual, and all kinds of anguish come as the penalty. This world chaos is merely the penalty of the broken law. Take a quick glance now at how it developed. Nimrod built the first city, Babylon, then Uruk, Akkad, and Kalneh. At first, the world was organized only into city-states. Each city had its own king. Soon, one king cast greedy, lustful eyes over a neighboring city or two. So he organized a large number of his men into an army, a fighting force, to march over to the neighboring city and take it by force. Soon the stronger, more cunning kings were ruling over two, three, then several cities, and nations were born. And as nations organized armies and fought wars, empires came into being. Businessmen in each city or nation fought methods of competition against their rival businessmen. All society came to be organized on this selfish getting basis. God was ignored. Man exalted himself and other men. As time went on and the system developed, some men specialized in politics, seeking to rule over people through government. Others specialized in business, seeking to amass great fortunes and to rule behind cover over the politicians. But even in the phases of religion and social activity, the competitive principle was dominant. There have been various forms of government, but remember this. Every single government in this world, of whatever form, whether communism, fascism, autocracy, or yes, even democracy, is merely a different method of administering this same overall Babylonish system. And it's the system which is the root cause of this world's ills and of wars. This system is a way of life. It's a way contrary to the laws of God, contrary to his revealed social, economic, and civil laws, as well as the great spiritual law. In religious language, it's the way of sin, because the Bible defines sin as the transgression of the law, 1 John 3:4. And as a spiritual principle, as you'll read in Romans 7 and verse 14, that law is a spiritual law. That law still operates. just as the law of gravity still operates, or the law of inertia, or the laws of physics or chemistry. And the more that law is transgressed, the more unhappiness, anguish, suffering, and death this world brings upon itself as a penalty. And every phase of our present civilization, our political organizations, our economic system, our social customs, even religious organization, is diametrically contrary to God's law as a revealed way of life. The real cause of wars is this whole competitive system, organized with certain selfish motivated scheming men always in control. What then is the solution? Wars can be prevented only by one strong enough to be a world ruler, clear-sighted and wise enough to completely change the existing system, to abolish all competition, to put the premium on giving instead of getting, to do away entirely with all regimentation with the present economic system, the present social system, in fact, with the whole of present society. He would have to be good enough and honest enough to rule this whole world for the good of the governed, not for the greed and pride of the ruler. And finally, that man would have to change human nature, because as long as man remains selfish, he will continue on this competitive and Babylonish system. Yes, it will take a world ruler, a ruler who is the perfect man, one who will rule with fairness and justice, one who has power to abolish this entire world system and start the whole world going on the basis of love, one who will not take any selfish advantage of his great power, but will rule only for the good of his subjects, one who has the power to change men's minds and hearts, to change the very nature of man. Only one such man ever lived, Jesus Christ. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that will do it for today's Trumpet Hour. You can send us comments if you'd like. Tell us what you think of the program by emailing letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to my guests, Brent Noctegal, Richard Palmer, and Andrew Miller. Thanks to our technical staff, Dwight Falk and Josh Sloan. And I'll leave you with this thought from Pierre Corneille: happiness seems made to be shared. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
Listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.